There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Luke, one of the first questions we'll randomly ask our guests is if you recognize any of the voices in our intro. And if you can plead the fifth if you weren't paying attention too.
My name is Logan to start if we want to
clear that part up. Luke?
Yeah.
Logan Holt.
That is it. We want to just get that going to the start of the podcast.
Luke Elfner, here. I think, and in my head, I just said Luke. So that's a really hot start.
We might have to restart that.
I don't know if we want that. Right, in there,
or no.
We have to restart
this
that.
No, this is raw. So we're going to do this because we don't edit anything. Johnny, I need you to read what I told you the name of the episode was. This is the true test.
Logan Holt episode.
All right. So I didn't know your name. I fucked up. Yeah. And that's on me and I need to learn from it and get better. Logan Holt. Can you name any of the people in our intro?
Well, I got Bryson, obviously, for saying the driver sucks. John Daly.
Mm-hmm. There's two more.
I think that's all I got.
It was Bob Does Sports, if you follow. Okay. He was the first one. And then the third one is Bruce Buffer.
That's actually Bruce Buffer. I figured
Buffer.
That was you doing a Bruce Buffer impersonation.
No, he did a cameo. So,
okay, yeah. Wow, that's perfect.
Mr. Logan Holt. That's really tough, and that's really on me for calling
you Luke.
It's
tough to recover.
It's really hard to recover, but I told Johnny what your name was, and then you came in, and I just called you Luke. So I was thinking about our pro at Winsong. You're a pro, obviously, and I was just thinking Luke. His name's Luke, so.
Nowhere to go but up here, so.
Nowhere to go but up. So we met through a golf nonprofit. You're from Arizona. You're in town for your nonprofit, and you didn't have anything to do tonight. So I said, dude, would you come on our podcast and talk about your awesome stories and your background? And you said, hell yeah, I'm in. So here we are. Welcome to Minnesota.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's good to be here. Coming from Arizona, I was pretty pumped to put long sleeves on for the first time in a while.
There. So.
Yeah, it's like 45 degrees colder here than it is there today. So it was pretty.
When it's 70 here, so it's probably like 110 there.
Yeah, it was like 113 when I left or something. So it's pretty.
Wow.
It was raining when I got here and I was pumped.
Yeah.
And you're
playing some pretty good golf this week here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I get to play a couple of pretty pure tracks here. Hazeltine, Spring Hill, and then this place, Winsong. I don't know if anyone on this podcast has heard of that, but
have you played pretty good. Have you played Winsong before?
I have not. No, I've played. I haven't really played it all up here, so nice. I'm pumped to get on some bank grass.
I played Hazeltine yesterday. The greens were so good.
I imagine they're not bad out there very often.
Yeah, no. I don't think they're bad very often, but it was in really good shape. So
awesome.
Yeah. We're going to love to hear your opinion on the three. It'll be fun because Thursday you'll be playing Winsong after you've played Spring Hill and Hazeltine. So it'll be really interesting to see your thoughts. And all three are, I mean, to be fair, very different in their own respects.
They're all amazing golf courses. I mean, obviously you've heard of Hazeltine prior to this. I mean, Hazeltine has hosted multiple majors, the Ryder Cup. It's going to host another Ryder Cup. Spring Hill is, you know, a really exclusive course that the conditions are just immaculate. Doesn't get a ton of play, but the conditions are perfect. I mean, your ball is going to be like on a pillow, right? Yeah. And then I think Winsong is a combination thereof. An unbelievable golf course that can stand up. It's a second shot golf course, you know, pretty big driving areas. Second shot golf course for sure at Winsong.
Yeah. And so, just a little background. Have we talked much about like the podcast at all? I don't know if we did.
Yeah. We talked a little bit here and there.
Really briefly.
Pennsylvania, but not a ton.
Yeah. So, when we met, we were playing coincidentally Oral Valley.
Nice.
That just happened to work out that I was wearing this and that's where, you and I last saw each other. But the podcast, like we all started it, together, us four, like to have guests on, chop it up about golf, how to get better at golf, like talk about golf courses, just a whole slew of things. And one of our favorite things to do is bring on guests and kind of hear their stories, because everybody's got awesome stories. And I know when you and I talked, you played college golf. We'll get into that a little bit. You worked at one of my dream courses I would love to play, because I hear it's one of the best hangs in all of golf, which is Whisper Rock. And clearly you've played a ton of awesome golf courses. So it'll be really fun to talk about. So maybe start off with a little bit of your background. I don't even think I know a ton of it. And then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, near Columbus, Dublin. If you've seen the memorial, pretty close to Muirfield Village. Grew up there. My family has a little public golf course about 45 minutes outside of the city. You know, $30 to play on the weekends, little just fun public course, 6,000 yards from the tips. My favorite course in the world, called Liberty Hills. If you're ever in Columbus, got to go there.
Nice.
So I grew up there playing all the time. Been playing for my whole life. My whole family's in golf. My grandparents found the golf course forever. Both my parents played some version of college golf. My stepdad's a PGA pro. My uncle's a PGA pro. Kind of just my whole family's golf through and through. So grew up in Columbus, did that. I played college golf at Butler University in Indianapolis, played 4 years there, loved it. And then after I got done, decided didn't want to be done playing, wanted to keep chasing it and see how far I could go. So I moved out to Phoenix and kind of just, you know, picked up some gigs here and there as far as parking cars. And I, like Jordan mentioned, caddying at Whisper Rock, and then kind of just put the pedal to the metal for 7-8 years, chasing it from Mesquite, Nevada to France to New Mexico to California to every good and bad golf course in between. So kind of just all over the place, just
That's
chasing
awesome.
It.
Yeah, are you glad you did it?
Oh yeah. It was fun. I knew I needed to get out of my system, and really see how far I could go. The last thing I wanted to do when I graduated was jump in a 9-to-5 and work in an office and all that. I wanted to, you know, take some risks, do what I could, see what I could. So, it was a lot of fun. I feel like I gave it a really good run, gave it a good test, had some success, shot plenty of 75s and 80s too, but had a good time.
How much better did you get over that 5 to 7 years between like senior year and college you to like when you were like, all right, I'm going to, you know, do something else?
A lot. So right away, basically my first year, I realized pretty quickly if I didn't make some serious changes in my swing and some progress that it was going to be a pretty short-lived run. So that first year, basically, I decided what worked in college wasn't going to work if I was going to keep going. So I kind of did a big swing change, worked on a bunch of stuff. And I would say that first 3 years, I improved probably more than I've improved in my whole life, basically, as far as for that quick of an amount of time, just because I worked really hard at it and knew I had to. And then
was it mechanics? Or what little, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, first it was mechanics. First, I realized I basically played for 6 months and realized my mechanics that I had just weren't going to get it done.
What was going on? Enough. Just out of curiosity.
So,
Andy's very technical, by the way. Yeah, so you can like,
we can dive in. Deep dive. Basically grew up, I weighed like 100 pounds the majority of my life, like practically into high school. So, always playing clubs that were like too heavy and too big. So, I'm major flipper, major long, flipping it. I would get way inside and just flip it. So I all through college, I basically fought the duck hook.
Mm-hmm.
I played with it. I figured it out, aimed way right when there was OB left.
Just hammer draws.
hammer draws, figured it out, you know. And the more I played professionally, I realized I just trying to hold off something was not going to work and I needed to change it. So basically, I used to be super flat and super long. I worked on getting more across the line at the top. That leads to some more power too, along with some more consistency. Worked at that. Took me basically a year to change my whole swing plane. And then once I figured that out, just to kind of answer as far as how much of it was physical and mental, that was the start to figure out how to do that. And then from there, you basically just have to get really used to making birdies and not being afraid of making more birdies. In college, you're shooting, if you shoot even at every single event in college, you might be an All-American, depending on what kind of schedule you're playing. If you shoot even every tournament in professional golf, you're going to be broke and
Not a professional golfer
very long.
Yeah.
So you have to get really used to like being 4 under, trying to get to 5 under, stuff like that. That took me a little bit. You're playing way different courses than you're playing in college golf or in amateur golf. You know, you're playing in amateur golf and college golf, you're playing a lot of really great clubs. You're playing clubs like, you know, Hazeltine, Windsong, stuff like that, as far as where you're playing a lot of big collegiate tournaments. When you get to professional golf, you're playing munis, $50, you know, until you get to the, you know, Corn Ferry, even Corn Ferry is not really playing probably as good of a schedule as a lot of college golf teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just playing a totally different brand of golf. You're playing shorter courses, you're playing easier courses, and you got to go light them up. Where in college, you were playing courses in October that are playing 8,000 yards. Where you're just trying to hang on for dear life. So that was a big change too, just kind of mentally changing the whole. It's a totally different sport, pretty much.
You know, that's funny because one of our buddies is making a run right now, Ben Siegel, and I was talking to him the other day, and he's like, "Man, I have to play the white tees more because I just have to get more comfortable." Yeah, making birdies, 100%. You know, having little wedges into greens. 100%. Like, is that a big thing?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you realize it's funny because, you know, you basically work the whole time trying to get to the PGA Tour, but nothing you do until you get there resembles a lot of it. You know, you're playing, like he said, you know, if you're playing, of course, like Windsong from the Tips, you're just not going to play many courses like that in professional golf until maybe Korn Ferry Tour or higher, but definitely nothing below that. I mean, even PGA Tour Canada, PGA Tour Latin America, you're playing some quirky golf courses that are like 6,500 at elevation. There will be all over the place. Just, it's a totally different game than you're used to. And meanwhile, the cut's 7-8 under and, you know, 35 under is winning half.
I mean, supported by some of the, you look at scores on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, they're super, super low, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, because they're playing these courses where they have to shoot 8-9 under par.
Yeah.
To have a chance.
Yeah. And those are like the courses they're playing on Korn Ferry Tour are some of the, you know, it's still the best club in the city. It's just the best club in Knoxville instead of the best club in New York City or the best, you know what I mean? It's just, those are really still
great courses.
Those guys are lighting up, and those guys have gotten so good at hitting, you know, you have a 440 yard tight par four that isn't goofy or done everything dialed up. It's just, everyone drives a 330.
Yeah.
And everyone's on the track, man, from 110, and they know exactly how to wedge 110 with the exact amount of spin they want. And so that hole is just not going to provide a challenge for Korn Ferry players, guys that have gotten to that level.
Yeah, it's truly like unreal. I mean, we talk about it all the time and just how good guys are now. And yeah. I mean, just like, it's hard to fathom, truly.
Yeah.
And you were saying that you looped at Whisper.
Yeah. I looped at Whisper Rock for 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a course that you can see how good players are.
For sure.
I mean,
are you the one that told me you did Rom's bag?
Yeah, I caddied for Rom in, let's see, last February. So like 2 months before he won the Masters.
Yeah, but we're talking, yeah, of course, there's all these PGA Tour players there. But then you have like, there's tons of guys there that don't play in the PGA Tour that are unbelievable players.
Yeah, it's you know, I think they say they have one of the lowest average handicaps in the country. I'll tell you a quick story about just, it kind of encapsulates it. I wasn't in the group, but they used to have a big mid-AM senior AM tournament out there every single year. And one day they were playing it. It was the same day as US Open local qualifying. So the one guy who was a member who was like a zero handicap, really good player, plus handicap, said, "Man, could you guys imagine playing in the US Open if you actually qualified? That'd be crazy." And the guy who was his partner at the tournament said, "Oh, actually I played in the US Open in 1989. It was great." And he went, "Oh my God, we should be dusting these two guys." And both guys they were playing against said, "Oh, actually, I played in the US Open in 96. So I played in 92.
Oh man.
I played in 87. So the guy turned to the caddy and went, "God, I guess it's just you and me. That's crazy." And the caddy went, "Sorry, man, 2008.
That's unbelievable.
Everybody in the group, including the caddy, besides this guy, had played in the US Open. Yeah. Out of the five guys standing on the tee. Wow. So it's just kind of that kind of play. It's like not even a...
Were you the one that told me the story on Rom's bag when he, the half yard? Was that you?
I don't think so, no.
There was somebody that told me they were on John Rahm's bag and they were trying to encapsulate, maybe it was Wonder, I can't remember. They were trying to encapsulate how good he was. And he stepped up and said, "If we get any wind behind us, give me a 5-iron. I need that half yard. I can get here in two."
Oh, no, and yeah. No, that was me. Sorry.
That was you? Can you tell that story? Because you're not going to do it justice. And so, it was you. I knew it was you.
Yeah, sorry. So we're on 18.
It was Logan Holt.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Luke Holt. So we're on 18 at Whisper Rock Lower, and yeah, we had 235, something like that. And he was standing there saying, "Man, if I get any wind behind me, I can get 4-iron in there. I just need some wind behind me to cover that left bunker. You know, it's like, I'm like right on the edge of it right now." And we stood there for a while, and finally we got one breath of wind. He was like, "Quick, give me the 4-iron," and ripped it and was like, "Oh, that just needs to go a breath. If it just, that keep it up wind." And we got up there and it carried the bunker by like a foot. And he knew the whole time, he was standing there saying, "I just need a breath of wind to get this 4-iron over that bunk." And we're, you know, 235 yards away. And I'm like, thank God. I don't really think I can try to make it anymore, because watching that, you're like, I'm never going to be that good from 235 yards.
How did that get set up with you caddying for him out there?
Just kind of a random luck of the draw day. He was just out there playing. Yeah, he's a member out there and was just out there playing. And
no way. And what was it caddy. Like?
It was great. I mean, he shot 63 from the back tees. Not great weather. Pretty cool. Soft course. Playing as long as he can. Missed 3 putts inside 10 feet. Lipped out an eagle putt on the last hole. I mean, it just looked like a regular person shooting 75.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he won the Masters 2 months later. So to be fair, you're talking about the absolute peak of what golf can be played at. But yeah, I mean, played the par fives, 5 under. Just, I mean, complete. Hardly made a putt outside of 10 feet.
Practice, just domination.
Yeah. Just.
I mean, that's pretty cool though, because he was number one in the world then.
Yeah, I believe it was like he was going to the match play the next week.
Yeah, so I think right he would have been
man.
Number one in the world and probably at his best.
Yeah.
And you got to caddy for him.
It was,
that's unreal.
It was fun.
I mean, we're also talking about probably one of the, where more PGA Tour pros are members than.
For sure. Yeah.
Maybe anywhere.
Yeah.
Besides Florida, you know, there's some courses in Florida that have a lot of PGA Tour members, but like I was saying, there's so many guys there. Like guy from, upper Midwest here, used to be a member at Winsong, Mario Tiziani.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tiz is probably one of the best ball strikers in the world.
Yep.
And I mean, I think that you could probably support that as well. And then there's, you know, I mean, there's countless guys that are out there.
Yeah. I mean, like a guy like Tiz, just another guy there where every other course, he's absolutely would light it up. The famous story there is the year Jeff Ogilvie won the US Open, he lost in the club championship out there. So.
That's
he
tough.
He picked off the US Open. I think he got beat by Kevin Stadler that year. That might be wrong.
Wow. But
I know he won the US Open and didn't win the club championship in the same year. So it's a pretty special spot.
It's pretty nailed.
So college into professional golf. And what was your professional career arc like? I mean, I would imagine you started from the bottom.
Yep. Yeah. So my first year I got out, I decided, I was just going to try to Monday and anything I could to get status as quickly as possible. My first year I played 8 straight Corn Ferry Mondays, and never did that again.
did you make?
0. So most of those are like 100 to 120 for 6 spots. So I remember, like, for example, just for one, I was in Wichita, I was 4 or 5 under at the turn, and started par bogey on the back 9. I think at that point I needed to either birdie in or birdie 6 in my last 7 to make it.
Oh my
After
God.
Shooting 32 on the front, you know, you're just like, all right, you can't, you know, you can't have one, you know, you hit an OB, might as well get in the car. 3 putt, might as well get in the car. And I did all those things plenty back then. So still do. But yeah, if you have unlimited money and a really good attitude, those are good ways to chase it. But, they wear on you and they're expensive and they're tough, but yeah. So I played a bunch of Mondays early on. And then, as I realized, I kind of needed more experience to improve too. Played a lot of mini tour stuff, played a lot of state opens, traveled around. I went to European Q school twice, kind of just bounced all over from a ton of small towns in the Midwest and the Southwest to some tournaments out in San Diego, California, Phoenix, kind of all over.
Did you ever get any status anywhere like Sunshine Tour or any of that?
No. So, Sunshine, I was the one year I was thinking about going to Sunshine. It was 2020. So that obviously didn't work out, but, you know, kind of on the mini tours out there, and then yeah, just kind of chasing, trying to play some Mondays and get some status.
We have some buddies that are members, their dads are members, I guess, out of Winsong. They're playing like Dakota's Tour or that kind of thing. But that's like supports your point that you're playing golf courses that are, you know.
Oh yeah. Dakota's especially. I mean, those guys shoot 30 under every single week.
Yeah. You're playing on golf courses that are in the middle of nowhere towns in North Dakota.
Yeah.
And you better shoot real low if you want to cash.
Yeah. There's guys in the Dakotas Tour, some guys that live out in Phoenix stuff too, that, you know, have made 6 figures in the Dakotas Tour lifetime and stuff. And
yeah,
I would venture to say it's some of those old school 6,000 yard country clubs and stuff. You could put some tour guys out there that wouldn't sniff a few of those Dakotas Tour legends that have been out there forever, right? Light it up.
Yeah. Did you, intersect with anybody of, interest, in your days grinding it out? Like, get paired up with anybody that went on to make it or anything like that?
Yeah. Here and there. I mean, there's a couple guys in Phoenix that play the Skins games and stuff that have gone on to make it. You know, Joel Damon plays a lot of the games out there and stuff. He's always out there. A guy named Brandon Harkins got on tour for a while, still kind of hanging out up there, bouncing up and down. a bunch of those guys. The other day, my friends and I were actually talking about a college tournament we played very poorly in, where I looked and Thomas Peters won the tournament and clipped me by maybe 32 in the event. So
that's maybe by 32.
It made me feel a little bit better. It was a course called Wolf Run in Indianapolis. It's no longer there. That was an incredible course and maybe the hardest course we've ever played. And we were joking about how it was our worst college tournament we'd ever played. And I was like, I only lost by 32, but at least it's to a guy that's on the PGA Tour or Live now or wherever he plays. But
so your college town is a wild scene. I know some folks from Indianapolis, the Carmel area. It's a wild place, man. So I was at Crooked Stick last year, which I love.
Crooked Stick's awesome.
It's awesome. The average age of a member is like 79 or something.
It's up there. And I'll tell you what, I caddied there a little bit in college too. They have young members too. So that tells you
how many old members they have
because they have, you know, a lot of like, you know, mid 40s guys that are good players. Yeah. There's a good like scratch group out there and stuff too. But
so my buddy growing up, he grew up at Crooked Stick and caddied there in the summer. And when he was in high school, it was like Peyton Manning, like heyday. Right. And so the famous story is like Carson used to carry the bag for Peyton all the time. And he got to basically build a relationship with Peyton. And he said, like, he's like the coolest guy ever. Like I caddied for him, you know, whatever, 50 times.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Carson's at Vanderbilt and he's talking to this girl and comes to find out that she's like a big, you know, Peyton fan. Right. And so he's like, you know, immediately goes into like, well, Peyton's like my buddy, right? He's like my friend. Like I know him super well. And she's like, no, you don't. You're so full of shit. Right. He's like, okay. He stashes it away. And like 2 months later, he's on the bag for Peyton. He's like, Peyton, I got a favor to ask you, man. Like, would you ever call this girl and tell her that like, I really am like your buddy. So they're in the locker room at Crooked Stick. Peyton's like, no problem. They're in the locker room at Crooked Stick. He's got no service. Peyton's like, don't worry about this. Like I'll take care of it. He gets up on one of the benches, holds the phone up to the window, gets like a bar, calls this girl, phone rings. She answers, hello. He goes, how you doing? It's Peyton Manning. And I'm not going to do the accent justice, but this was the line that he said. He goes, you know, around these parts, they say I'm the king of Indianapolis. Well, darling, if I'm the king, Carson's the prince.
Legendary.
Yeah, that guy got laid for sure. Yeah,
sure did. Sure.
So, are they married now?
Yeah, no, but it's the best ever, man. So what? So you're up here playing Hazeltine, Spring Hill, and Windsong. I take it you've played some golf courses in your day.
Yeah, decent bit.
What's up there for you? Like, what are some of your favorites?
So, I mean, my cliche answer, one of my favorite places on earth is probably the Old Course.
It's Andy's number one.
It's Andy's number one.
I mean, we just become best friends.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's the most cliche ever, but it is just, I haven't played another place that I probably had that much fun at that I could play every day that you could shoot 63 or 83 at. That's
I
just
really
like
you.
Yeah. It's up there. Yeah. There's a couple other standard ones that a bunch of people know of probably are, in Ohio where I grew up, Scioto in Columbus is, an old school Donald Ross, which I just love. And then there's a course I used to play USAM qualifying at every year in Cincinnati called Camargo. Mm. That's always on all the top 100 lists, and old Seth Rayner. That course is great. And then one that's in my top five that's totally off the beaten path that I played for European Tour qualifying twice is up in Artelo, France. It's up kind of near like Dunkirk area up on the English Channel. And it is, there's two courses there. Le Pins is the one they play it at. And it is... old school Tom Simpson, I believe. It's incredible. You'd never get there. It's like a couple hours from London, a couple hours from Paris. The only way you'd go if you were going to play in a tournament. People from England drive over through the channel and go play it every now and then. But it is like a total all-timer that you would just have to completely hunt down.
Wow, that's
you'd
awesome.
Have to know about it. Otherwise, you're never going to find it.
You would never find it. Yeah, I mean, it's like if you were looking up, it's always in like the continental Europe list, maybe in the middle and something like that. But it is just a total... through the pines on the water. It's really cool.
I'm excited to, hear your thoughts after your week here, because I mean, we're pretty partial about some of the golf courses that we play here in Minnesota. Especially, and I'm not going to name any golf courses here. Some courses that are ranked, we don't necessarily feel on our podcast here that maybe they're not as good as some of the other golf courses that are around. And so, it's always interesting when you hear about a golf course that is in the middle of nowhere that nobody's ever heard of, and you're saying it's one of the best all-time places you've ever even heard of. So, it's one of those things that our listeners should, you know, take the opportunity to play some of these places because
sure.
you're never going to know what you're going to get into.
Ohio is like super sneaky for golf. Like for has sure. six or for eight sure. on the top 100 list or something.
Yeah. It's way up there. Columbus alone has four.
Yeah.
Double Eagle, is a great course there. Muirfield Village, obviously uh-huh. Scioto, the golf club. Yeah. I mean, Columbus or Ohio in general, there's a course in Dayton called Moraine that a lot of people probably haven't heard of that had the PGA in like 1940. I think the PGA was held in Ohio like every other year in the 30s and 40s and 50s. You'll just go to some random course. You don't even know. And it'll be like, oh yeah, we had the PGA in 47. You're yeah. like, what? Like there's a picture of, you know, Ben Hogan in the pro shop with our pro that year when he won it or whatever. So it's, there's a lot of really great spots like that in Ohio. It's a crazy sneaky state of just so many old school country clubs.
Yeah. For sure.
So you grew up in a super golf family. Did you always love the game or like obviously got into it a little bit? Do you ever feel pressure to play it or?
No, I was pretty lucky. I mean, my family, it was always basically kind of like I was either parking carts or playing. So I played a lot more than I wanted to park carts, but no, it was never any pressure to play or anything like that. I was just there and I was at the course every day anyway, and always loved it. And, I've had some competitive golfers in my family and everything, but no one's ever, it's not like anyone's ever had a pressure to fulfill anything or anything like that. It was just, everyone loved it. It started my family actually, kind of has two public courses in the Columbus area. My great grandpa had a pig farm that he turned into a golf course in like the '70s, just outside of Columbus too. So it's kind of just been something my family fell in love with a long time ago, and everyone in my family's involved in golf one way or another.
Yeah. What have been some of the like tournaments you've played in, or, you know, you always hear stories that guys have about like, especially grinding. There's that one guy, there was an article. So do any of you guys follow, Monday Q
yeah.
info
yeah.
or whatever?
My favorite Twitter
yeah.
account.
Yeah. There's the one guy that like goes and he shoots like 104 in qualifiers
yeah.
all the time. Do you know who I'm talking about?
100%. Yeah.
yeah. So did you see much of that in the professional golf, like coming up? And
yeah, I played with one of those guys in the, Vegas pre-qualifier one year for the Shriners.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. One of those guys that like, he like lives in Washington, D.C. and plays in every single one of them and never breaks 95.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Which just has money and wants to.
You want to.
Monday. Just wants to waste money.
Yeah. If you check the pro box, I mean, you don't have to do anything else. As long as you say you're a pro, you don't have to show that you're good. You don't have to do anything.
Once yeah. you have to pay your $1,500 or however much.
Yeah. So like that would be probably like $400 for a pre. And then if you ever got through another couple. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of guys like that. It's a. If once you check the pro box, you can do whatever you want. So there's guys that go shoot and they, you know, most of them, some of them are delusional and they're like, oh, this is going to be the week I'm going to make it. Most of them actually know. They're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, I'm just trying, you know, working on it. This is the best way for me to get better. And you're like, hey man, if you really, you know, if you play quick and you get out of the way, that's fine. But there's other guys that don't you see guys at tournaments all the time that just have no clue that are guys like that kind of.
So the other thing that I think has, you know, sort of come up in the news recently, which makes sense, but I think there's probably a lack of appreciation. There's definitely a lack of appreciation having not walked in the shoes of like your, you know, golf is your job. It's your career, right? When you're doing that, it's how you make an income. It's how you pay the bills. It's right. All that. I don't need to tell you. We've seen some guys, a guy lately, cheat and get caught cheating. Did you see any cheating when you were out there? Did you ever suspect anybody? Like,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. You definitely do. There's guys that have reputations of where most people who play in tournaments know that guy's gotten caught cheating before as a mm-hmm. cheater. I've never seen it for somebody that actually was going to impact the tournament at all. I played Canadian Q School one year in San Diego, at a course called Carlton Oaks, and I played with this kid the last day, and I was out of it, and so were the other two guys I was playing with. I think none of us were going to make it. We all had to shoot 58 or something the last day to make it, so we're basically just going through the motions, getting done. And there was a hole there that the OB line is basically right where the heather's at. And on this one hole, we're on probably our 10th hole. This kid hits it like 30 yards into the heather that's OB. And he's over there just standing over it with his caddy, like looking over the shot. And me and the other guy in the group are like, hey man, you sure that's not out of bounds? He was just like, no, I think it's good. And we were both like, all right, whatever. Whatever. You know, we've got 8 holes left. We're all 17 care. Over and not going to make it. And so, I mean, I've seen that a bunch yeah. of times if like you said, those guys that shoot 95 in Monday qualifiers, I almost guarantee you that 95 is hardly ever by the book, because by the end of the round, right. the other guys in the group are like, yeah, man, I didn't see that 2-footer you missed. Whatever you get up. What'd you have there? Par? Great. Sure. Yeah. Okay. You're 19 over. No one's worried about it. Yeah, so yeah. that kind of stuff happens all the time. I haven't seen it a ton as far as guys that are really, really good, that are actually impacting things, but they're certainly, especially when you get on those mini tours, they're gossip factories and everyone's driving from course to course and no one knows what's going on. So there's guys that people just know have, you know, had a past and stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know how you live with yourself. Like just being known as a cheater, like on that level of competition.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just self-denial and
they're not cheaters
in their heads. Like, right.
Yeah. It's like you're, you know, it's something obviously broken in the head where you think it's the same as like fouling a guy in a basketball game.
Right.
You're like, oh, these other guys just aren't trying hard enough. You know what I mean? These guys don't really know how to win. Like if you don't get caught, you're not actually, you know, it's stuff like that. So.
There's I was going to switch. So I was going to say if there's
no,
okay. I was going to ask, cause you were a teaching pro for a little bit too, right?
Sure.
A lot of our audience that listens, we just recently did an episode on like how to get better for amateurs and like prepping golf and all these different types of things. Like, I don't know. Have we had we've talked to a couple different teaching pros, but like, what's the biggest thing you see when you're, talking with, you know, those people that are trying to break 90, 100, even 80, like good players, what's the most common mistake stuff that you see? Cause the one thing that you said that really resonated with me was when you realized you had to make a change and then it took you a year to do that. And then, and then you're like, okay, now I can kind of go. The fact that somebody that was a D1 golfer and trying to make it, and it took them a year to make that one change before they could really focus on something else, really like set the expectations in your head of how hard you have to work. What are the things that you see and tell people they really need to work on to kind of, you know, get there a little bit more? I'd just be curious to, I imagine there's a ton of common stuff that you see the normal golfer come in and needs to fix.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, you made a good point there where it kind of depends on what level you're at and what level you're trying to get to, as far as what to work on. Like I'd say for, if you're a high handicapper, the easiest way to just knock strokes off like crazy is work on your short game. There's a ton of guys that, I mean, go to any muni in the country and you'll find a guy that can't hit it out of his own shadow, that doesn't have a good golf swing, that absolutely drums everybody and shoots 75 every single week because he gets it up and down from inside of a trash can, makes every 10 footer, and it doesn't matter. So if you just want to knock strokes off like crazy, get a really good short game, and then you can figure out everything else from there. Besides that, it's kind of based on how much, you know, work you're willing to put in as far as swing stuff goes. You know, I think one big thing is a ton of people don't compress the ball. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do that as far as, you know, everyone tries to lift the ball and be a sweeper. People get super, you know, bent out of shape as far as swing planes, you know, inside to out, outside to in, over the top, whatever. That stuff's all, you can get it to match up correctly and work on that stuff. But if you just focus on, you know, really compressing the ball and not lifting it and sweeping instead, making a divot after the ball instead of, you know, sweeping it and trying to lift it up, that's, you rarely see a guy that's taking divots after the ball all day that is not a good player, at least not a good ball striker.
Yeah. God, that's speaking to my soul.
Andy, you're a good ball striker, dude.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're working on it. I'm going to have you take a peek after the episode. Yeah,
we've been in the lab. Cause we started doing this thing, call it December of last year. And so like a lot of when we first started was, you know, the December, January, February, March months in Minnesota, not playing a lot of golf. You're literally like in here doing practice and trying to figure out how to get better. And, we've all like done a ton of work on our swings, Andy probably the most in terms of improvement and like how much he's really dedicated to doing it. So it's just really interesting to see different calibers of players, the things that they work on and how long it takes to make those changes. And then Tony and I were just talking last episode about how, like, you know, we're at that point of the season now where some of those changes are starting to go away a little bit. Like start to go back to your old tendencies and you realize, oh, I need to shorten up my swing a little bit. I need to get back to what I was doing before. And it's just crazy how much it takes to change something, really get it ingrained in your head. And, you know, a lot of people that listen to us and even myself, like in the grand scheme of things, I haven't been playing golf that long. I mean, for me, like I basically started playing golf after college and I'm out playing with these guys that are 50, 60 years old. And like, they've been playing for 30, 40 years
for sure.
You know, and I've been playing for 10 years and you think you've been playing a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, like you really haven't. And so it just goes to show how much work it really takes to get better and make the changes. And it's always fun talking to guys like you that literally see it and do it for a job.
Yeah. I mean, so much of it's based on just how much time you're willing to put in and how much you really want to work at it with your game. You know, you can do small stuff to improve stuff here and there, but a lot of people don't have the time to put in a bunch of hours to go through a major swing change or stuff like that. So it's sort of just kind of knowing what each person wants to do with their own thing.
A lot of time people also don't want to take that time.
For sure.
You know, you're trying to be a professional golfer, like you knew if you were going to make it, you had to make that change. There's tons of people out there that, you know, they're playing and they can piece it together and they can find a swing thought for a couple of weeks and they can start to play pretty decent golf, but they don't want to take that time where you're like, I'm going to play shitty golf for a year.
Yeah.
There's no silver bullet. No. Golf really is what it comes down to.
Which, by
to.
The way, it's fine. If you're having fun and you want to be a 15 the rest of your life and you're enjoying it and you're...
Rock on, man.
You know how 100%. To play, go do Absolutely. It. Yeah, exactly.
Do you have your amateur status back?
No, I don't. I still enjoy... I think I'll probably just stay professional. I still enjoy playing in some stuff here and there.
Yeah.
I go back to Ohio for like some small section stuff here and there. That's and fun. There's some, you know, if there's somewhere, a place I want to go travel to that has a tournament that I like, you know, go try to
put it together for a couple weeks. Together and... Logan's got a nails move.
I'm sure. Real nails. No surprise. I just wondered if you wanted to do the AM circuit at any point.
Yeah, I've had buddies that have played professionally that have gone back and done it. I might at some point. I mean, yeah. You certainly, as we were talking about earlier, you actually play a lot better golf courses when you're an AM than you are when you're a professional.
Especially yeah. if you're going to play in like USGA stuff. 100%. And you're going to try to play a mid-AM yeah. or something. You're going to play pretty 100%. Nice golf courses.
I always tell people, I'm like, if you really want to work your game and you're down to like a scratch and you're a good player, if you just play the USAM qualifier, US Mid-AM qualifier every year, US Open qualifier every year, if you're, you know, a scratch or better and looking to do that, you can go play three unbelievable golf courses every single year. If you want to travel that day, you can go play, you know, three top 100 courses that you'll never get on the rest of your life. Like that course, Camargo, I was talking about in Cincinnati, that I used to play at every single year. I mean, you can't get on it.
You
cannot get on that course. You get to play 36 there. If you hit a second shot into a green during the practice round, they kick you off and you don't get to play the next day.
No way.
Yeah, wait. Say that again.
If you hit a second shot into a green, like a full shot in a practice round, if someone sees you do it, you're out of there.
Like, ooh, I just kind of bladed that one. I want to hit
another one. Nope. You're allowed to hit a couple chip shots. You're not allowed to hit two full shots into a green. If they do, you're
too many divots.
No way.
Too many divots, too many ball marks. That's not what they're about. I mean, it's just an exclusive place. The urban legend is that the Reds were sold during a round of golf there. Like one guy said, hey man, I'm thinking about getting rid of the Reds. And the other guy said, I'll take them. And that's how it happened. So it's that kind of place. Like they don't do a bunch of rounds a day, but it is every year going and playing the USAM qualifier there was awesome. And it was just, it's like that, you know, if you want to go play amateur golf and you're good enough to go play in some of those qualifiers, you can play unbelievable golf courses around the country. It's great. Yeah.
I don't think we'll probably wrap. I know you probably got to go soon. It's like when we played Laurel Valley, one of the coolest things about what they do there, and I don't know if I told you guys this, but they do two tee times a day. So this is just during the week, Monday through I think it was Thursday, maybe
something like that. Yeah,
because it's members only on the weekends, but they do two rounds a day, and it's a shotgun start. They do one in the morning. Everybody comes in, caddies eat, all the players eat lunch, and then they do another shotgun in the afternoon. And that's what they do all Monday through Thursday. Like, have you seen anything like that? So
there's no
tee times.
It's just, there's
no, not during the week. They just do. Yeah. I mean, they have a ton of, yeah, it's a good way to get
a lot of rounds in,
a lot of outside groups in, and still have your members be able to play all weekend and stuff like that. Yeah. It's a cool, that place was awesome. Yeah. I've never seen a course do that before. No, that was a unique thing.
Yeah. Really unique, really special. I'm excited to hear your thoughts after playing golf this week here in Minnesota.
Might have to have him back on.
Well, so here's
come back
the thing
on for
is
a Minnesota
that,
ranking. Yeah.
I mean, you're for sure going to be doing this again next year, right? I mean, we'll probably have you on before then, but
yeah, sounds great.
It'll be like a yearly thing for you. So
I'll give you the ranking.
So we got one episode scheduled for every year. Mr. Mr. Logan Holt. Thank you for coming on, man. Hey, really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. Absolutely.